No, this is magic. Just move this a little, so, thank you.
Hope that it can be cut in case I...
Oh, let me tell you what we're doing, because this is, we want to do a personal memory. People know him, people love him, people work with him. And we're going to take quite a bit of tape from the open appointment with Mr. Schweitzer next Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Hope to get to see Mr. Sorensen. We spoke with him, with his secretary, who was supposed to call him back today. Mr. Salinger, we've had no luck with it at all. We can't mm-hmm. get a return call. When we get all this tape, we'll have transcript made, and you find that on a program like this, the tape begins to fall into pattern so that we can begin to intercut it.
Mm-hmm.
So that I don't know what we're going to use of anybody, mm-hmm. but it's so that it's very hard. It's just informal. How are we? I'm not going to be on mic at all, and I'll just hold this here. Can we get a level?
You want me to say something?
Well, I think that's enough. Got it? Good. I don't know exactly where to start. Would you introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm I'm Evelyn Lincoln. I was the personal secretary to the president from January 3rd, 1953 until November 22nd, 1963.
10 years.
Mm-hmm. Almost 11. Would have been 11, 3rd of January.
Could you tell us about the first time you met him or the first time you heard about him?
Well, I was working for a Southern congressman in the House, and I looked around and I thought I would like to go with someone that was more active. And so I noticed Congressman Kennedy, and I liked his ideas and what he was trying to do. In fact, I was so impressed with the idea that he was going to run against Henry Cabot Lodge that I thought it would be nice if I could work for him if he did win out. And so I volunteered my services at night and helped in his campaign in 52. And then when he was elected in 53, he asked me to go along, and I was his secretary during the whole time from then on.
Tell us, what was he like in those days? How old was he?
Well, let me see. If he was 46, he must have been around 35, 36. Well, he was the same throughout. Always human, always thinking of the other person. In fact, the very first time I met him, he came out to me and wanted to know my name and what I was doing and where I was working and did I like what I was doing. And I was typing some things for him, and he wanted to know how long it would take me to do that, and did I enjoy it, and was I going to continue, and never saying, like so many congressmen do, well, I'm Congressman so-and-so from the state of so-and-so, what can I do for you?
You mentioned the human quality. What do you mean?
Well, he was always thinking in terms of you, not in terms of himself, and whether he could make it more comfortable for you. Did you have the good light where you were working, or was the typewriter all right, or how about the chair? Just always concerned of the individual and not of himself.
Was there any change in that? He became much busier, I imagine, when he became president. But was there any change in this?
I thought he was humble when he was a senator, but he was much more humble as president. He was even more trying to reach the individual and see what he could do for them, always thinking about all of the people, the old people, the school children, and just everyone.
How did he, you saw him with so many people, how did By what means did he reach people? I'm asking a very vague question.
Well, you felt just like he was a member of your family when you met him. In fact, it was a little difficult to really realize that he was a president because he was so down on the same level with you. I mean, you felt a closeness to him. You didn't feel awe-stricken, but you just felt like it was just some old friend that you were visiting with. It was a very strange thing, and I think everyone felt that way. You couldn't help but feel that way.
I think the whole world felt that way. Can you describe the first days when you moved into the White House, when he became president, what the feeling was like?
Oh, well, of course, you know, it was all so strange. I'd never been in my office before I came in on January the 21st. And I went to my desk, and he was over to the office before any of us. And he walked over to my desk, and he says, "Is there any mail?" And that's the very first thing. He was always so conscious of the mail. And he always wanted to know what people were thinking and what they were writing. He always wanted to sign every letter he possibly could. And he would not only read the letter, but he would make changes in the letter, or if it were a personal friend, he would add a postscript on the bottom saying, "I hope things are well with you, and many thanks for writing." So that was really one of his major concerns, was the mail.
How close to his office was yours? Could you describe?
Right next door. In fact, the door was nearly always open between our two offices.
Would you say that again, because I interrupted in the beginning?
It was right next door. In fact, the door was nearly always open. So it was just almost a part of his office.
Did he, when he wanted to speak to you, did he come in, or did he call you in, or was it by telephone?
Well, he had a buzzer, and he'd buzz me, or sometimes he would call, or but he was in and out of my office constantly all day long, always looking in my file box to see what the mail was and see what papers and what calls. And there's one thing about him, whenever he'd receive a telephone call and he was busy and he couldn't take it, he'd always return the call. I don't think there was ever a call left over that he never returned.
What about the Kennedy style?
Well, it's very vivacious. I mean, you can feel their presence. They're alive, alert, and you feel as soon as they come in, the tempo rises, and you immediately start working faster. It's very catchy, and you don't mind a bit. In fact, you like to work because you feel like there's a goal, there's a purpose, you're really getting someplace.
What do you think, this is hard to answer, it's hard to ask, what do you think his main purpose was?
His main purpose, his father taught his children to enter the government and do whatever they possibly could to make living and the United States a better place in which to live. And I think that he tried to touch every person and everything that he possibly could to see if he couldn't make it just a little bit better. I think that's his whole purpose.
Not only here, but
every place. I mean, he not only in the international field as in the national field. It was just to see if he couldn't do something to help the people. Very, very sincere.
Could you describe if there is such a thing as a typical day with him?
Oh, well, yes. He would come to the office anywhere from 8:30 to 9. First thing he would do, he would want to know what his appointment was. Well, before he would come over, he would call and find out what his first appointment was. And then he would come over and he'd want to see his mail, see if there were any important messages, and then might talk with several of the assistants in the White House, and then he would start his appointments. Well, then in between his appointments, he would talk to staff members and might come back out to my office, meet some people that I might have in the cabinet room for him to meet. And then he never got away from the office until maybe 1:30, 1:15 to 1:30, and he'd go over and take a swim in the pool, then go up and have his lunch. And he'd have his lunch in bed, and he'd be reading constantly the whole time. And then he would relax maybe for 30 to 45 minutes. And then he'd come back to the office, and he'd carry on again until, and never left the office until maybe 7:30 and 8. And when the children were here, the children would come over maybe about 7:15, and he would have really a children's hour. They would play, they would romp, he'd be on the floor with them. He was a typical father, and he just loved it. Then he'd walk over to the house, maybe sometime he'd take a swim, and maybe they'd go in swimming with him. And then he'd walk over to the house and they'd have dinner maybe around 8:15, 8:30, or if they had guests, maybe a little earlier. Then he'd try to go to bed around 10:30 or 11. And that was one of the typical days.
Tell me a little more about the children coming over. This where?
Oh, well, at night, and then also during the day, John would be out in the south lawn, and he'd see him, and he'd go out, and he'd clap his hands, and John would come pell-mell across the yard and run in there and be so happy, and of course, I always had a plate of candy, and he'd come out there and get a piece of candy, and then also Caroline and her schoolmates would come out and play out near her playground out there. And they might all come in sometime and get candy. Or maybe she'd come in as she was going back into the White House just to see him and say hello. And it didn't make any difference who was in there. If the most important person in the world was sitting in there, he had time to say hello to her and introduce her to whoever was there. It was very, very nice family relationship. And Mrs. Kennedy would stop in. If she'd be out on the south grounds, she'd stop in, see what was going on, and say hello. Very, very friendly.
We get, of course, the pictures show this. Mm-hmm. Well, you say they used to have a children's hour. Can you describe the scene and where it took place?
You mean the when they go out to play?
No, when the children.
Oh, the children's hour. Well, that was generally in my office and in his office. It most generally, the nurse would bring them over, maybe around between 7 and 7:15, and they'd sit in my office. Maybe he still would have someone in there with him, and then as soon as they'd leave, well, he'd come out and they'd go into his office, or they'd be in my office and. And they just romped and played. They really did. I used to say that if people could see the President of the United States on the floor with his two children, they would really be pleased.
That's wonderful.
It really was. And he just dearly loved those children. And they did too. They thought so much of him.
Have you seen the children?
Yes, I have. I've seen them. Mm-hmm. John was up here, and of course, oh, they're fine. But I think Caroline realizes it more than John, because he's only 3. But they're real nice little children.
What about his sense of humor?
Oh, well, he always had that. Always. You could tell by the kind of twinkle in his eye that he was ribbing you or giving you, I mean, going to say something real funny. But he always had a sense of humor. I mean, things, even though in the serious part of things, the negotiations and things like that, he always had a release by maybe making some little remark, which would relieve the tension. People were all tensed up, but he could say some little thing would relieve it.
Did you travel with him at all?
Yes, I went on all of his trips. I was with him constantly. Wherever he'd go, I went too.
Is there anything particular about that?
I could talk on end about the people that lined the streets everywhere. It just was fantastic. And the thing of it that impressed me the most was the fact that I'd say that 50% of them were children, and they would have flags and homemade signs and Welcome Jack and all the way with JFK. And it was just marvelous, the children. It just seemed like they had a goal and they had a hero, that they really did go all out for him. And it was the same way overseas. In Paris, the people were so exuberant. And I never will forget in West Berlin. That was just out of this world. It really was. The people were hanging from the roofs and out the windows. You couldn't get another person in that square. And on his last trip to Dallas, it was miraculous, the people that were lining the streets. And I said as we went through the main part of Dallas and we hit the freeway, I said, gee, I don't know when I've seen such a people that were so pleased to see the president. And they really were. That was the last group.
You were there.
Yes, I was there. I was.
How did you hear? Did you hear about it? Did you see it?
Well, I was a little farther back in the motorcade, and we went on to where he was going to speak for lunch. And we got out of the motorcade, and we tried to get in to her, into this building. And while we were there, some newspaper man rushed up and said, the president has been shot. And somebody says, oh, don't pay any attention to him. He's just trying to cause, it's just a rumor. But I then went to one of the police officers there and said, is it true? And they said, yes, he is in the hospital. So I asked to go up there. And so I learned then. I went into the same room Mrs. Kennedy was in. So it was really a shock.
Did you come back in Air Force One?
Yes, I did. Uh-huh. I stayed. I came back in the motorcade right following the body and in Air Force One and went with her out to Bethesda. And then up there she said to me when it got a little late, she said, Mrs. Lincoln, why don't you go home and get a little sleep? I'm going to have to stay a little longer. And she said, you hold up until after it's all over and then we'll all collapse.
You mentioned the children lining the streets, the crowds. What was it?
I don't know. Really, I used to say that one thing that I would love if somebody could ride in the president's car and get the look on the people's faces as he passed. It was just like a glow on their face, and the girls would stand and just in awe, and they'd say, "He looked at me. He smiled at me." It was just something. It was a magnetic appeal he had, and just a wave of the hand. And ever so many people have come in to me and said, "I really knew him. He waved at me in the crowd." That's all they had, but they felt they knew him.
Can you describe what you rode with him in, sometimes in the presidential car or not?
No, I never rode in that bubble top of his, no. But I rode in cars right behind.
Can you describe a little more of what the crowd looked like as you're driving in them?
Well, it was always 4 or 5 deep, and they would be standing expectant, expecting to see him, and just as he got to where he was going to pass them, all of them would just immediately raise up their arms and scream and holler. And of course, you know, during the campaign, we had the various teenagers that we'd call leapers and jumpers and runners and all those. So it was just a vibration. And they'd keep looking after him until they no longer could see him. And then they seemed to lose interest with the rest of the motorcade, and they'd say, "Well, I wonder who they are. Are they some freeloaders?" Or the rest didn't mean so much to them as he did.
When Colonel Glenn made his flight, you had a television set in your office.
Yes, I did.
Could you describe that day and his response?
Oh, well, yes. He was in the cabinet room. There was some meeting in there. And as he took off, the word I had in my office, the TV was on the east wall, and so all he had to do was to come out of the cabinet room and look right at my TV set, and all of them came out, and he was very pleased. You could see he didn't say much. I mean, he didn't clap his hands, or he wasn't that that type of emotional person. But he was extremely pleased, and it just so happened that Mrs. Kennedy was walking outside, and he called for her and told her to come in, and she also watched the TV at the same time and saw it go up in orbit.
It's really the quality of humanity.
It is. They were so human. It was just, I don't know how to explain it, really. Unless you were right there, you wouldn't, you couldn't know that it was so alive in the White House. It really was.
What do you think his greatest contribution?
Well, I think his greatest contribution is putting into the younger generation, motivating them to be good citizens and to take part in their government. I think that, to me, would be his. And I think it all started in 1956 when he barely missed the vice presidential nomination because the children just wept and cried in front of the TV sets. And they wrote letters, and from then on, it was Kennedy all the way for them.
How do you think history will mark him?
Well, of course, you're asking me. I'd mark him as the greatest we ever had.
What was the happiest moment?
The happiest moment, I think, was when he was nominated for president.
Were you with him?
Yes.
Can you describe it?
Yes, I was in his hideaway. Yes. Well, it was a very exciting, very exciting evening. We had a TV, and the lights blew a fuse just as Alabama was starting to count. And so we got that fixed. It blew three times, so we missed the first few. But then when it got down to Wyoming, and everybody shouted, "We just need 11 more." And he said, "Oh, there's Teddy." And then, of course, he was nominated, and everybody jumped up. And his first reaction was to call Mrs. Kennedy. So he said for me to get her on the telephone immediately. And while I was getting her, why, the ambassador called him. And so he talked to both of them immediately.
Do you remember what he said?
No, I don't. I didn't. I was too excited to listen to his conversation. But it was really exciting.
one other question. You spent so much time with him. This is a hard question, but what did he give to you personally and as a human being?
Well, I also felt like I should do everything I could to help him in what he wanted to do. Long hours didn't mean anything to me, and I also wanted to see that his personal needs or anything that would make his life a little easier. It was a pleasure for me to do it. And since he's gone, it seems like the bottom's dropped out.
Yeah, what? It does.
It does.
Yeah, completely. Where do we go from here?
Yeah, well, I'm sure. I'm sure that when we pick up the pieces, well, there'll be a purpose.
Bill, can you think of any? It's just wonderful, really.
Well, he really inspired me. He really did.
I think he inspired all of us very much.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a wonderful man.
Thanks so much.
Yes.
Very
nice.
Nice.
I'm glad to do it. If it can help in any way.
Oh, it's going to help.